Welcome to Torat Imecha Parsha with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Leah Feinberg, and today we will be learning Parashat Miketz. At the end of last week's parasha, Yosef found himself imprisoned, together with Paro's chief baker and wine bearer, each of whom had dreamed a disturbing dream. Yosef correctly interpreted each dream, predicting that the baker would be put to death while the butler would be restored to his position. And pleading his innocence of the charges against him, Yosef used that opportunity to request that the butler remember him to Paro upon his release. The butler agreed, but not so surprisingly, quickly forgot his promise upon his release from prison. Our parasha opens 2 years later, Vayhi Miketz Shnatayim Yamim, at which time Paro himself had two disturbing dreams in sequence, which none of his assembled advisors could successfully interpret. Suddenly, the chief butler remembered that when he had been incarcerated, his dream had been correctly interpreted by Yosef, and he suggested that Yosef be released and summoned to interpret Paro's dreams. Yosef indeed was released, and after stopping to shower and shave and change his clothing out of respect for the king, arrived at the palace and interpreted Paro's dreams to predict 7 years of plentiful harvest to be followed by 7 years of such intense famine that they would erase any memory of the years of plenty. Following his interpretation, Yosef offered some unsolicited free advice to Paro. Let a wise and judicious man be appointed over Mitzrayim to collect the produce of the 7 years of plenty and store it in warehouses to be sold during the years of famine. Paro liked the idea so much that he appointed Yosef to the position, gave him his signet ring as a sign of his authority, dressed him in royal garments, and had him paraded through the streets of Mitzrayim so that all would honor him. Paro changed Yosef's name to Tzofnat Paaneach and gave him Osnat, the daughter of Potipharah, as a wife. Yosef had two sons, whom he named Menashe and Ephraim. According to the Midrash, Osnat had been adopted by Potipharah and was biologically the daughter of Dinah and Shechem. Yaakov had inscribed this information upon a necklace, which was worn by baby Osnat when she was given away for adoption and discovered by Potiphar, and Osnat had been instrumental in saving Yosef's life when Potiphar's wife had falsely accused him. Yosef's interpretation of Paro's dreams soon proved correct, and all too soon, the 7 years of plenty were overtaken by a severe famine affecting the entire region. People in all the surrounding countries were desperate for food, but grain was only to be found in Mitzrayim, where Yosef himself controlled the storehouses and sold the grain as a source of profit, bringing great wealth to Paro and Mitzrayim. The Midrash teaches that all the wealth that Yosef accumulated for Mitzrayim would later enrich Bnei Yisrael at the time of the Exodus from Egypt. As Perek Mem Bet, the second Perek of the parasha, opens, Yaakov Avinu, whose family is suffering from the famine, heard that sustenance was available in Mitzrayim and sent 10 of his sons, all but Binyamin, to acquire grain. And when they arrived and stood before Yosef, he recognized them immediately, but they did not recognize him. Rashi explains that while the brothers had been grown men at the time of Mechirat Yosef, when Yosef was sold, Yosef himself was still a beardless youth. The Baal HaTurim explains that even without this fact, it stands to reason that it would never enter the brothers' minds that this might be their lost brother. Although they had determined among themselves that they would seek Yosef out in Mitzrayim, they were looking for someone downtrodden, mistreated, malnourished, not the king's viceroy. Rather than immediately reveal his identity to his brothers, Yosef undertook a series of charades. He accused his brothers of being spies, come to the land of Egypt to uncover its weaknesses. Upon their profession of innocence, an explanation that they were in fact 12 brothers, one of whom was missing and the youngest of whom remained at home with their father, Yosef feigned disbelief and had them locked in prison. After 3 days, he released them and offered them an ultimatum to prove the truth of their claim. One brother, Shimon, would be held as collateral, and the others would return home with the grain. If they were in fact telling the truth, they must return to Egypt, bringing with them the younger brother who remained at home, and only then would their story be proven and Shimon released. In verse 21, Pasuk Chaf Aleph, the brothers expressed their belief that they were being punished for their role in the sale of Yosef. Vayomru ish el achiv, אבל אשמים אנחנו על אחינו, אשר ראינו צרת נפשו בהתחננו אלינו ולא שמענו. על כן באה אלינו הצרה הזאת.
The brother said to one another, "We are guilty over our brother, whose pain we witnessed as he pleaded with us, and we refused to listen. That's why this tribulation has befallen us." Note that the brothers did not admit guilt over the actual sale of Yosef, rather over their lack of mercy in ignoring his cries of distress. Two suggestions among many to explain this anomaly are: one, they still felt justified in having protected the integrity of Yaakov's legacy, as we learned last week. That's what they had been worried about. So they're feeling badly about their lack of mercy, the cold shoulder that they turned to Yosef, but not the actual fact of the sale itself. Or an alternative is provided by Rashbam, who suggests that a careful reading of the text implies that the brothers never sold Yosef at all. It was the passing Midianites who heard Yosef's cries and pulled him from the pit. And they were the ones who sold him to the Ishmaelite merchants. The brothers had thrown him in the pit and left him there to whatever fate would befall him. They only found out that Yosef was gone from the pit upon Reuven's return. Rabbi Menachem Liebtag of Yeshivat Haratzion argues that the topography of the area where the sale took place supports Rashbam's theory, although it remains a minority view and not consistent with various midrashim on the subject. In any event, the brothers do express their feelings of guilt, and they were overheard by Yosef, but they didn't realize that he understood their Hebrew because they had been communicating with him through an interpreter. Yosef himself was overcome by emotion, but he turned away from his brothers to conceal his tears in order to carry on the subterfuge that he had designed. The brothers had no choice but to return without Shimon, and upon reaching the inn where they were to stay overnight on their return trip, they discovered that their money, at Yosef's command, had been returned in the sacks of grain they carried. They returned to Yaakov and told him all that had befallen them, and he was greatly distressed, but refused to allow Binyamin, the only son of Rachel who remained to him, to be brought to Mitzrayim. As the famine intensified and the food they had brought back with them ran out, Yaakov requested that the brothers return to Mitzrayim to replenish their supplies. The brothers insisted that they could not return without Binyamin, and only after Yehuda offered to act as the guarantor of his safety did Yaakov reluctantly agree to part with him, sending along gifts to placate the viceroy who had acted so cruelly towards them. When they arrived in Mitzrayim, Yosef noticed them with Binyamin in the line of people waiting for his attention, and he instructed his attendant to bring them to his home and prepare a feast for them. The 16th century Talmudist known as the Shilte Giborim sees in Yosef's words to his servants, "Utvoach tevach v'hachen," two hints to Hanukkah, which almost always coincides with the reading of Parashat Miketz. If you take the last chet of the word tvoach, tevach, and add it to the letters of the next word, vehachein, the letters can be rearranged to spell the word Chanukah. This is considered the primary source for the custom of eating a festive meal on Chanukah. Moreover, the gematria, the numerical equivalent of the phrase utvoach tevach, which is very unusual terminology in Tanakh, is 44, which is the number of candles that are lit throughout Chanukah. The brothers, oblivious to such hints, were intimidated by this invitation, as they thought they were going to be indicted for having stolen the money that they had found in their bags on their previous trip. They approached the chief of staff and immediately brought up the money that had inexplicably appeared in their sacks the previous time, so as not to be thought that they were hiding something. But he merely brushed them off. He just assured them it must have been some sign of divine favor. Don't worry about it. He had Shimon brought to them and inquired as to their father's welfare. And when Yosef joined them, he could hardly contain himself at the sight of Binyamin and had to leave the room. He regained his self-control and rejoined his brothers, seating them according to their ages, which they had not divulged to him, and increased their sense of discomfort. Yosef openly favored Binyamin, giving him five times as much as the others. As the brothers were preparing to leave with their supplies replenished, Yosef whispered to his servant to once again replace their money in their sacks, but this time to add his silver goblet to the sack of the youngest. As they were on their way, the brothers were pursued by Yosef's men, who accused them of stealing his goblet. They pleaded innocence and allowed the men to search their sacks. But when the goblet was found in Binyamin's sack, the brothers were devastated. They were forcibly brought back to Yosef, where he demanded that Binyamin remain with him as his slave, as his penalty. And the curtain falls as our parasha ends on a cliffhanger, with a threat hanging over Binyamin's head. Many of the commentators ask why Yosef carried out this deception, causing his brothers so much angst. Abarbanel uses particularly strong language, asking how Yosef could have acted in such a criminal, snake-like manner, showing no mercy for his brothers, whose families, including women and small children, were literally starving, not to mention his own father, whose suffering could only be exacerbated by the imprisonment of Shimon and the threat of impending harm to Binyamin. According to Ramban, Yosef is acting out of a sense of mission. He felt a personal sense of responsibility to bring about the realization of his prophetic dreams, not for his own sake, but to fulfill the will of Hashem as it had been revealed to him. His goal is to bring them to a state of complete submission and to have Yaakov and Binyamin join them in keeping with the dreams. Rav Yitzchak Arama, the Akedah Yitzchak, rejects this approach on the grounds that it's not up to the Navi, to the prophet, to fulfill his own prophecy. That remains in the hands of Hashem. He offers another suggestion, which is later echoed by the Abarbanel. Everything that Yosef does is to test his brothers, to see whether they sincerely regretted and had repented of their behavior to him. In order for him to do this, he has to assess their behavior toward Binyamin, their only remaining son of Rachel. And he therefore schemed to have them bring Binyamin down to Mitzrayim, where he bestowed special favor upon him. How would his brothers react when once again the son of Rachel was favored over the others? Would they defend him when he was accused of stealing? Or would they abandon him to his fate at the hands of a cruel and merciless stranger, as they had once done to Yosef? Nachama Leibovitz Zatz, Zichrona Lebracha, cites this approach and takes it a step further. Not only was Yosef testing his brothers, he was offering them the opportunity to do complete tshuva. According to the Rambam, complete tshuva means facing the same temptation that caused one to sin, with the freedom to commit the same act of wrongdoing, but refusing to do so out of a sense of true commitment and yirat Hashem, fear of God. This approach is predicated on the assumption that we mentioned last week, that Yosef never felt towards his brothers the way that they felt towards him. Yosef is consistent in wanting the best for his brothers, that which is designed to promote their spiritual growth and awareness. He longs to be reconciled with them. He can hardly hold back his tears, but first he wants to help them achieve their own potential greatness. Rav Eliashiv Zatzal points out that this desire to unify their family in the observance of the value system which was transmitted to them by Yaakov Avinu is another link between Parashat Miketz and Chanukah. He notes the emphasis by the Gemara on the phrase Chashmonai Ubanav. Matityahu stood up against the Syrian Greeks accompanied by all of his sons in keeping with the example set by Yaakov and Yosef, an example of family unity and commitment that continues to inspire. Wishing everyone a Chanukah Sameach and continued B'sorot Tovot, Nisim V'Niflaot.